Our second case this morning is United States against Jones. Counsel for defense, you may proceed.
Chief Judge Efron, honorable judges of this honorable court, may it please the court. The granted issue in this case has several parts. However, it really boils down to one simple question. Is indecent acts with another a lesser included offense of rape? There are a couple of ways you can answer this question, but the answer is simply no. Indecent acts is not a lesser included offense of rape. To begin with, I should note that this case is presented under the old Article 120, where indecent acts was a 134 offense. As I'll explain, it doesn't necessarily change the analysis, but the answer is still that indecent acts is not a lesser included.
Is the question in all cases or in the case presented?
In all cases. Indecent acts in all cases is not a lesser included offense for rape.
So the factual events and the procedures in a particular case have no bearing on it. If it is not a LIO in your view of an enumerated offense, that's it.
That's correct, Your Honor. The test is established by United States Schmuck versus the United States Supreme Court, where they said to be necessarily included in the greater offense, the lesser offense must be such that it is impossible to commit the greater without first having committed the lesser.
Now, the first sentence there says to be necessarily included. Does that case establish the universe of lesser included offenses? That is, does it preclude the president from identifying lesser included offenses in the manual for courts martial?
It does not define the universe, but it does establish the test for defining the universe of necessarily included offenses, meaning that it does preclude the president from saying that because it's a judicial function, whether or not an individual has sufficient notice through the elements test to satisfy the due process clause.
And why doesn't a person have better notice in the manual courts martial than they'd have to do by applying the elements test, which has bedeviled courts for years?
The elements test, Your Honor, was established to make it a much easier distinction and to do away with the far more ambiguous, difficult to understand inherent relationship test.
Now, the president. I understand that. Those are all tests for determining whether something is necessarily a lesser included offense. But why does that preclude the president from identifying something as a lesser included offense, even if it may not be necessary to do so as a constitutional test?
It would preclude the president, well, first of all, from the MCM, in many respects, the Appendix 23, which lists the analysis, we find that when something is listed as lesser included offense, a lot of times the MCM is simply citing a case that stands for that is confirmed that the elements do, in fact, establish it as a lesser included offense. So in many respects, the president is actually saying this is a lesser included offense. But to the extent that conflicts with the element test, there's a fundamental due process issue. And I don't believe the president saying this is a lesser included offense gets past the due process requirement that he be on notice from the elements of the offense themselves.
I'm still missing something on the notice issue. If the lesser included offense is listed in the manual for courts martial, why isn't that all the notice that somebody needs? I understand there may be other constitutional issues here, but just in terms of due process notice, why isn't that sufficient notice?
It's insufficient notice, Your Honor, because it may not be correct. Much like the case that really stood for indecent acts, Schofield was incorrect. It was contrary to the precedent established by Schmuck. Well, it may at times, and I don't dispute that the MCM can provide notice, where it does conflict with the elements test, it is insufficient notice, we would argue, as a matter of law, because it does not meet the bare bones requirement that an accused be on notice before trial, that all the elements are in fact subsumed, and in fact the courts have determined that to reach that greater offense you had to go through this one first. Indecent acts, there's nothing about indecent acts that was required to be proven in order to reach the rape charge the accused was actually on notice of.
So the fact that the defense attorney acknowledged, rightly or wrongly, that indecent acts was an LIO doesn't address notice in your view?
No, Your Honor, because what he recognized was he used the phrase, in the abstract, it can be. But the language of Article 79 from the Schmuck Court decision is not whether it can be, it's whether it's necessarily included. The fact that indecent acts could, upon some occasions, be a lesser included offense does not make it a lesser included because the requirement is that it's necessarily, it's always there. And because indecent acts has two components, it can be open and notorious or it can be forced without consent. Where the theory is open and notorious, there's absolutely no way for an accused to be on notice through a rape charge that he will also have to defend against a consensual intercourse that's open and notorious. It's not a subset.
So this court had it wrong in Medina and Miller when it focused on the circumstances of the particular case and didn't draw black letter, sweeping black letter lines.
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that it was wrong in Miller. I think this is an extension of Miller. Miller started with the idea that Clause 1 and Clause 2 are not per se included, which was one of the basis for
this. That wasn't my question. In Medina, Miller focuses on the fact of in this case, but what it should have said is in all cases, including this case, in your view. The threshold question is whether a simple disorder under Article 134 was a lesser included offense of the violation of Article 95 in this case. But it should have said generally, because your rule is that it's either in all cases or none.
The exception to that would be where Weymouth has said that the pleadings may in fact provide notice, where the pleadings in fact have extended that and provided notice to the appellant that he will also have to defend against service discrediting conduct, then yes, it can be provided outside.
So you're changing your position. You started off saying if it's not necessarily included, then end the game. Now you're saying necessarily included or the pleadings.
Well, I believe with the pleadings, it would be necessarily included. If the pleadings are alleging that it's service discrediting or prejudice of good order of discipline, now many of the offenses don't require that as part of the pleadings. But that's what Weymouth says. So,
well, the pleadings in this case seem to give defense counsel notice that it was an LIO because he said it was.
In the abstract that it can be, there was actually a following conversation with a judge when he said to her, okay, so you agree that it can be? And he said, yes, I agree that it can be. But Article 79 isn't whether it can be, it's whether it is necessarily included in this case and in all cases of indecent acts. But that's not the facts. The elements for indecent acts include two elements that are not required to prove rape. The first is the service discrediting and prejudice to good order and discipline. But indecency in and of itself can be by force or without consent or open and notorious. And
would it be your view then that any LIO in the code that is based on 134 then would no longer be valid?
Based on the Schmuck test, no. It would not be a valid lesser included offense because of that extra element.
So all 134 LIOs are out?
Under the Schmuck analysis, yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
Well, I'll let one of my other colleagues ask a question.
Was there another question?
You mentioned that the due process violation came, let's see if I have your argument right, from the lack of notice. And the lack of notice is not the absence of notice in the executive order, but rather that it's incorrect. That is, it is incorrect to label a particular offense as lesser included unless it meets the Schmuck test.
Yes, Your Honor.
What constitutional principle is at issue here? Is it separation of powers? What is it that precludes the president from identifying with advance notice when one offense is lesser than another?
I believe the answer is due process. And I should note again, I've expanded a little bit because this particular case, indecent acts, is not listed in the MCM, even though the Schoolfield decision preceded the current versions of the MCM and even the 2000 versions. They didn't make that step. The president didn't make that step to recognize that indecent acts was a lesser included offense in accordance with Schoolfield. But looking at the broader picture, I believe it is due process notice. It's that the elements themselves provide the notice in advance of trial. In this case, where the problem in large part was the discussion wasn't even had until all the facts had been presented in the trial. The appellate didn't know in advance of trial that he was going to have to defend them. This was a fallback position from the government that, hey, we're going to have a problem proving rape, so let's see if we can get other lesser-included offense. But this isn't just a problem of lesser-included offense. It's a separate offense. The actus reus for indecent acts is totally different than a rape. The actus reus in this was that it was open and notorious, and that's what the problem was. Whereas the rape was that it was by force without consent. They're completely imposite theories of the case. In fact, the government theory was there was never consent. So this didn't even mirror, to go along with Medina, this didn't even mirror up with the government's theory of the case. It was a completely separate
thing. That's a different theory, though. That's that he did not have notice of the what he would have to defend against, irrespective of whether it's a lesser-included offense or not.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I think that's where the problem is.
Because to answer Judge Baker's question before about whether it would always be a violation, if the charging documents, even if and the evidence of the government's theory, identified the manner in which the lesser in the manual would apply, for example, in the open notorious here, then you'd have that notice, wouldn't you, even if it wasn't literally an element under the Schmuck test?
And I believe so. I think that's what Weymouth stands for. And I believe Schmuck can stand for that, although that wasn't the issue that we're necessarily facing. Schmuck was really purely an elements test. And I know the Supreme Court has since looked back at whether pleadings can be extended. At least Weymouth said in the military that may be the case, that pleadings may allege enough facts to put the accused on notice, even if it's not strictly elements. The Supreme Court has clearly said elements is enough, but at least under Weymouth, this Court has said that it may be extended to pleadings.
I guess the question that I have is, I mean, you're correct that in this, that irrespective of the view that we come to about things listed in the manual, the Indecent Acts is not a listed LIO of rape, right?
Yes, ma'am.
But
yes,
ma'am. I think that the questions are focusing on the fact is, do you think that Schmuck is focusing on the elements test as somehow a constitutional principle, or that the constitutional principle is notice? And if the constitutional principle is notice, which I believe is the case, why isn't the notice provided by being listed in the manual? I mean, I understand it's a fiction. You know, defendants don't know elements of offenses, and they don't go and read the manual for court-martial, but that's not the point.
And I believe it's noticed, ma'am, and that the underlying offense must be proven to reach the greater offense. And the problem with these is that the President calling it a title, a lesser-included offense, doesn't get to the fact, as a matter of law, that it is, in fact, required to prove the greater offense. The President, you know, is
but, that, but that's all labeling. It's labeling for notice purposes. It's not labeling for labeling's sake itself.
That's correct, Your Honor. But I believe a lot of times, as we're seeing in the MCM, the analysis is showing the President isn't labeling it as an independent determination, but rather as a recognition of what courts have said on the matter, that they are, in fact, lesser-included offense. I can't speak to all the offenses. I certainly haven't evaluated those. But even under indecent assault and indecent acts being lesser-included, the manual cites a factor, I believe, is the case where it stands for that as a lesser-included offense.
Is this case Ellis v. Jacob?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Is this Ellis v. Jacob? Does the President simply not have the power to prescribe? Ellis v. Jacob said, if, you know what it says. Is this case that?
I believe it is, Your Honor. I don't believe the President has that authority. It's a judicial function to establish elements. That's what Schmuck stands for. It's the court's analysis of and confirming that, in fact, the elements match up. The President doesn't have
that. But is Schmuck the means to an end, which is fair notice, or is Schmuck the end in its own right? I hear you saying Schmuck is the end in its own right, which is elements matching.
I believe that is the answer, Your Honor.
So there's no other means to get to the end. If the end is supposed to be fair notice, you're arguing there's only one means to get there.
That's correct. I think case law and the President can confirm that, but the elements is a judicial function, and that's what establishes the notice in the first
place. And the elements is the sole way by which you can provide fair notice of something, in your view?
As a lesser-included offense, yes, Your Honor. As I mentioned, in this particular case as well, the indecent acts was simply not a lesser included. It was a separate offense. In fact, interestingly enough, it could have been charged as a separate offense or even an alternate pleading. It could coexist. There was nothing about the sexual offense that they couldn't have charged open notorious indecent act as well as the charged offense of rape and not been multiplicious. The facts simply do not establish as a lesser included offense. Just briefly, the remedy would be the appellant's going to request that this court dismiss charge one of its specification and remand for a sentence reassessment. Unless there are other questions, I'll reserve my remaining time for the rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. You'll have an opportunity on rebuttal. Counsel for the government.
May it please the court. I am Captain Michael Rutkowski, along with Lieutenant Colonel Jeremy Weber, who represent the United States in this case. The military judge did not commit instructional error when he instructed the members on the lesser included offense in this case because, at the time of the offense and the time of the appellant's trial, abuse in acts of another was clearly a lesser included offense of rape under the law. The evidence and defense's theory reasonably raised this lesser included offense. The members were instructed on the appropriate factors to consider, and the ultimate findings by exception and substitutions did not amount to a fatal variance.
When you say it was a lesser included offense under the law, what law are you referring to? Schoolfield?
I'm referring to Schoolfield, Your Honor, as well as Iscarendo and Tolonici.
What about the manual for court martial?
And Your Honor, the manual for court martial.
But where in the manual for court martial is it listed as an LIO?
Your Honor, it's not specifically listed under Article 120. However, as recognized in Schoolfield, Article 120 lists indecent assault as a lesser included offense, and under indecent assault, indecent acts as lesser.
So it's a sub LIO.
Your Honor, the way they phrased it in Schoolfield, and which has been recently repeated by this court in Conliff, is it's a statutory subset of the elements of the greater offense. In this case, the government would argue that by having it in the MCM, contrary to the appellant's argument, the appellant is on notice, and that's what Schmuck stood for, is whether someone is on constitutionally sufficient notice. Now, in Schmuck, we're dealing with an 18 U.S.C. Offense, and the 18 U.S.C. code does not have lesser included offenses listed in it. So that's why Schmuck is going to be based on an elements offense, which is also a proper way to determine whether a lesser included offense occurred. But in this case, we have a unique code that specifically lists lesser included offenses, which also puts an accused on constitutional notice.
What code lists lesser included offenses?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What code lists lesser included offenses for members of the armed forces?
And Your Honor, let me correct myself. It's the actual manual that specifically lists the lesser included offenses.
My recollection that this court has repeatedly held that the provisions of Part 4 of the manual in which those provisions are found are not binding, but rather their interpretations that we give such deference as may be warranted.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Article 79 in its text says that accused may be found guilty of an offense necessarily included in the offense charged. Are we bound by the President's interpretation of what is necessarily included?
Your Honor, I believe in this case, it's whether the accused was on constitutionally sufficient notice.
I'm not asking a constitutional question. It's starting with a statutory question. Statute says, Article 79, that a lesser included offense is one that is necessarily included. Now, under what theory would we be bound by the President's determination that one offense is necessarily included in another if we're not otherwise bound by the President's determination as to what the elements of an offense are?
Your Honor, I suppose in that abstract that this Court would not be bound, what the government is trying to reiterate in this case is based on the facts of this case rather than the broad principle. The facts of this case, the accused was on notice as recognized by his defense counsel at trial. And so the lack of notice should not be used to undo his conviction.
Well, right now I'm focusing on the authority rather than the notice issue. And the question I have is, what authority does the President have to decide something that is necessarily included, and what criteria would the President use to make that determination if it's not the Schmuck test and it's follow-on cases?
Your Honor, to the extent that the granted issue in this case was an instructional error issue and these hadn't come up in the briefings, I don't believe I'm prepared to give a full answer to that. I'd have to ask for further briefing in this case to get into whether the President has the authority to set out those.
But isn't that what this case is about? That is, whether the President had the authority to establish the double lesser included offense of the indecent assault being lesser than the rape and the indecent act being lesser than the indecent assault. Isn't that a critical issue in this case?
Your Honor, I don't believe in our reading of the appellant's assignment of error that was a critical issue. They essentially made the argument that indecent acts was not appropriate in this case based on the facts. And as a sub-argument, they stated Miller and McCracken's opinions from from this court recently, without going into analysis of whether the president actually had the authority to make those lesser included offenses.
Does necessarily included mean necessarily included in the case before the court, or necessarily included in all cases?
I believe it's the case before the court, Your Honor.
What evidence of that is for that position?
Your Honor, in Article 79B1, it goes on to explain that language and states it's whether by either expressly or by fair implication based on the offense and the specification. So certainly there's going to be cases where the specification puts someone on necessarily included notice of the fact that there was a lesser included offense.
When you said that under this case, under the law at the time, blah, 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 does that mean that it is your view under the law of this time it would not be the same, or that you are not addressing that?
Your Honor, the government's not addressing that in that we believe the decisions in Miller and McCracken would be inapplicable to determining an instructional error issue at the trial 3 years prior to those decisions.
No, I understand that, but should we infer anything from the way you present that argument about present times or not?
I would not ask you to infer anything from that argument, Your Honor. To the extent that counsel has addressed this court's recent decision in McCracken, the government feels it's important to touch on some of the questions asked by Judge Baker in his concurrence in that opinion. Specifically, we feel that Article 79, B1 and B4 does allow the manual for court martials to specifically include lesser included offenses as appropriate notice. Schmuck turned on whether someone was on constitutionally sufficient notice and whether the LIO doctrine of mutuality could apply, where both counsels are on the same stage, basically knowing what the lesser included offenses could be in the case. The MCM allows that to happen, as well as prior decisions from this court gave counsel that kind of notice. In this case specifically, defense counsel said he was on notice of this as a lesser included
offense. Well, would you agree that the question whether something is an LIO is a legal question, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
And if, as a matter of law, something is not an LIO, a defense counsel can agree with the military judge erroneous statement that it is all day long. It doesn't change the fact that it isn't.
Your Honor, obviously in that situation, we'd have to review the basis for that opinion. And in this case, they were basing it on this court's prior decision. So I would argue it wouldn't be an erroneous decision.
Well, you're suggesting, though, that part of what we should look at in terms of notice is if the defense counsel agreed with the military judge. And all I'm suggesting is if we were to find that was an incorrect statement of the law, does it then matter that the defense counsel agreed with the military judge?
In that specific situation, if it was an incorrect statement of law, of course, that would not matter. But then this court would turn to a fatal variance analysis, which the government believes this conviction would survive a fatal variance analysis in this case, because we would have findings by exception and substitutions that's not a lesser included offense. In order to establish a fatal variance analysis, the appellant has to show one of three kinds of prejudice: that he's at risk of a second prosecution, he was misled to the extent unable to prepare for trial, or that he was denied the opportunity to defend against the charge. In this case, the appellant can't make any of those showing the precipice. He was tried for rape and convicted of indecent acts. There is no risk of a second prosecution. He was not misled or unable to prepare for trial. The counsel specifically stated he was aware this was a lesser included offense. Essentially, he decided to put this lesser included offense on as a defense to the larger charge. And finally, he was not denied the opportunity to defend, as this was a situation, unlike Marshall, where the military judge made his findings from the bench without giving the defense an opportunity to defend against it. This is a situation where the issue came up in discussions of instructions. Defense counsel could have certainly reopened the case and asked him put on more evidence on that charge once you realized that was an issue, but he chose not to.
Well, counsel, what about the materiality? If there was a substantial change in the nature of the offense, this was tried as a rape without consent, and the indecent act is generally based on an open and notorious act theory, which may or may not include a rape without consent. Seems to me that there is the very distinct possibility that we're talking about two different crimes here.
Your Honor, there is a possibility we're talking about two different crimes. We would note that the same act, mens rea, time, place, parties were all involved here. However, the defense has to establish both the materiality and the prejudice, and we believe our stronger argument is there is no prejudice here. This case is similar to Hunt and Lee, where the defense counsel was aware of the lesser included offense and was not caught by surprise, decided to put on his defense anyways, and this court specifically noticed that the lack of surprise and the lack of prejudice meant that that was not a fatal variance. At the very least, the findings and exceptions and substitutions are appropriate as they were not a fatal variance in this case.
I have a question, which is, do you think, I mean, you suggested that the president has the authority to make LIOs and that is, should be persuasive to us, right?
Yes, Your Honor. We believe that as so far as Schmuck and all the constitutional principles are on due process and notice, that is the best system for putting someone on notice, so long as this court finds that it's an appropriate LIO.
But who has the authority to define what to create crimes? It's Congress, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and would you agree that crimes are made up of elements?
Obviously, yes.
I mean, that's black letter law school criminal law, right? And so do you think, for example, that if it was listed as an LIO of rape in the manual, if larceny was listed, for example, as an LIO of rape, and what was charged was rape, do you think that he could be nonetheless convicted of larceny as an LIO?
Obviously, Your Honor, those are established with different facts and different issues.
No, but it's the same general principle. I'm asking you as a matter of general principle whether that would be okay.
Your Honor, as a matter of general principle, we would go back to Article 79 at that point to determine whether it's necessarily included a sexual assault offense and a larceny offense. Obviously, we'd have a very hard time finding a situation where that would be necessarily included in a sexual assault offense.
The elements are completely different, right?
Because, Your Honor, it's a different crime. It's a different...
And it's a different crime because the elements are different.
Obviously, Your Honor, any lesser-included offense is going to have somewhat different elements. Now, they are always going to be in a similar situation. You're going to have an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. You can have a simple assault. You're not going to have an aggravated assault, and then you're going to have a larceny. It's a separate situation. It's going to be defined. The purpose being, so long as the accused is on constitutionally sufficient notice ahead of time, he can have a fair trial. And that's what happened in this case. He was on notice based on this court's prior decisions and based on the subsections of the
manual. You don't disagree that the elements of rape and the elements of indecent acts, are very different, do you?
Obviously, the indecent acts is a lesser crime. It has less severe elements than that of rape.
It has different elements, doesn't it? Not just lesser, they're different.
Yes, it is.
So it's a utilitarian calculus. As long as he has some sort of notice, that suffices. It doesn't make any difference whether the elements of one are over here and the other elements of the other are over here. It doesn't matter.
No, Your Honor. Obviously, we previously stated, we feel that since it's...
Well, I'm not talking about the larceny versus rape scenario.
Correct.
But you seem to be saying that he had actual notice.
In
somehow.
This case, he did, Your Honor.
That's enough.
Is it
basically utilitarian calculus?
Your Honor, I guess I'm getting stuck on your issue of utilitarian.
Okay, well, is there a constitutional dimension that goes beyond utilitarian calculation?
Certainly. I would ask for the record, what's utilitarian calculation mean for the purpose of your question? So
I won't get Jeremy Bentham involved. So.
Well, that's what I thought you were asking, but I think... I mean, in all seriousness, I need to understand what the answer is. Is he supposed to say whether this is Mills or Bentham or something? Or
no, I'm asking whether actual notice in a particular situation is enough.
Your Honor, I believe in a particular situation.
In this particular situation.
In this particular situation, yes. Based on Schoonfeld, Tolinici, Iscarendo, based on the MCM, the accused was on actual notice. The defense counsel said he was on actual notice. To now turn around and based on this court's decisions 3 years later, to say he wasn't on actual notice even though he said he was on actual notice is kind of contrary to common sense. It's kind of a legal fiction at that point. And that appears to be what we're... getting into with appellant's argument is essentially we should use these opinions from this summer to undo what was the state of the law at the time the judge made his decision, even though the issue is did the judge commit error in making this decision.
But isn't that how plain error works if there's a subsequent decision?
Your Honor, we would think that in an issue where it's constructional error and the judge is being called into question on its legal basis, it's what his decision was at the state of the time he made it, what the law was. He didn't find it on a different issue. Now, that would be legal sufficiency, we think. In this case, if they're arguing that the state of law changed and it was no longer legally sufficient.
Counsel, can you give me a list of the circumstances under which one offense can be an LIO of another offense where the elements of those two offenses are different?
Your Honor, and again, this is why we've kind of gotten astray from what the briefing in this case was. We've asked for further briefing. That's not precisely what was argued. The argument was whether the military judge gave misleading and erroneous instructions, and he was actually talking about the elements.
Well, the issues that were briefed go well beyond that specific stated issue, and the government responded to those substantively. So, I mean, this is really at the heart of what we're talking about here. When is an LIO appropriate and when is it not appropriate? And it seems to me that the government has fudged a little bit and has said there are circumstances other than having the same elements when we can recognize an LIO. And I'm just wondering, what are those circumstances?
Your Honor, we would state the circumstances where you can recognize an LIO is either through their application of the elements test or through the specifically listed ones in the manual for court-martial.
And that's it? Or
yes,
are there
that's
more?
That's it, Your Honor.
Okay, so what about the situation where neither consul object to an LIO and the military judge instructs upon that LIO, whether or not it's right or wrong, but nobody objects at trial and there is instructions given to the members?
If this court finds that that was not an LIO, wasn't listed in one of those two situations specifically defined, then we would have to turn to a fatal variance analysis to determine if by exceptions and substitutions it's still
valid. I appreciate that.
Can I go back to your law at the time argument?
Yes, sir.
What if this may be fatal in the sense of a stupid hypothetical, but what if we said back then that the Fourth Amendment protected people from only outrageous and really ridiculous searches, but unreasonable ones were fine? And then we realize our mistake today and we come back and we say, no, the standard's really unreasonable searches. Would your argument be the same today that at the time the standard in the case law was really outrageous and not unreasonable, and therefore it didn't matter if the judge applied the wrong standard?
And, Your Honor, in that specific situation, I suppose we'd be talking about a motion to suppress or something else from a judge, which would be reviewed on abuse of discretion standard.
I'm trying to get you not to answer it based on some standard of review, but you see what I'm getting at.
I do, Your Honor, and I think maybe to clarify, it's important to note that the situation we had in Miller and McCracken is not the situation before this court in this case. In Miller and McCracken, we had a service court that was finding an affirmance on a conviction on a theory never presented at the trial of fact. Here we have the actual theory of the LIL presented to the trial of fact.
But I don't think that that's the question Judge Baker is asking you. I think he's asking you, assuming that the decision was made erroneously at point in time A and it was corrected later at point in time B, What do you do now about the earlier erroneous decision?
I'm not trying to get you to concede your case. I'm trying to find out what principle of law applies in such a circumstance.
The difficulty of that answer, Your Honor, is it will depend on the standard, because it will depend on the situation. It will depend on the decision made that was erroneous and everything else.
If the principle is fair notice, constitutional fair notice, I'm not saying, what if we got it wrong back then? How does that play out? What standard would you like us to apply in such a context?
Are we still applying the Fourth Amendment example?
No, we're moving over to fair notice is the concept. I can make up some other one, too, which is a ricochet shot. No, let's try fair notice.
Okay, fair notice, Your Honor. And that's
we said back then fair notice is based on newspaper clippings. And it turns out that it's more complicated than that. And we say, I don't know what we were thinking back then. And everybody agrees that at the trial they played the newspaper clipping theory. Now what happens? What standard should we apply to that?
Your Honor, and in that specific situation.
That excellent scenario, yes.
Yes, Your Honor. If that's the case, then the government would state that we go to the fatal variance analysis. If we said that he was not on notice, it was not a proper LIO because newspapers shouldn't be used for that basis, then we would go to the fatal variance analysis at that point.
Counsel, I see your time is about to run out, but I appreciate the answer to this question. And is this a fair statement of the government's position now with respect to the statutory situation? And that is, if this court is concerned that the phrase necessarily included in Article 59 is requires the application of a test like the Schmuck test, and that would possibly call into question Schoolfield and other precedents of this case, of this court, regarding the scope of lesser-included offenses of rape, you'd like the opportunity to brief that because that, in your view, was not the focus of the argument to date. Is that a fair summary of your position?
Yes, Your Honor, it's very fair. Essentially, that broader issue is not specifically what the issue was on the instructional error issue of appellant's case. So.
It may or may not be, but I wanted to understand your position on that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you. And you can briefly summarize now.
Yes, Your Honor. The military judge did not commit instructional error in this case by instructing the members on the lesser-included offense because at the time of the offense and the time of trial, the lesser-included offense was clearly under the law. Indecent acts was a lesser-included offense of rape. Appellant's counsel recognized on the record he was on notice of that offense. The offense was reasonably raised by some evidence, and the members considered the appropriate factors. As such, this court should affirm the findings and sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have rebuttal?
Yes, sir.
So to take any questions you have, but I do want to go back to at least one point. I initially started off in a much broader perspective, but I don't want to lose track of the fact that this is Imran Jones. And in this particular case, I just want to make sure I'm clear, he did not have some specific notice of indecent acts. It was not, it's a separate offense altogether. Accordingly, the defense did not have the opportunity to really put on whether it was indecent or not, whether it was legally or factually indecent, whether it was like Izquierdo or more like Sims or whatever the case may be. And so for this particular accused and these specific facts, he did not have sufficient notice. It was non-proper, lesser-included offense. Certainly loved the opportunity for the court's opinion to be broader than that, but at least in this case, there was clearly no notice. Unless there's any other questions, I'll summarize. Appellant was charged with rape but convicted of a different offense, one of which was not fairly unnoticed. And decent acts with another is simply not a lesser-included offense to rape. It was error to send that to the members, and the conviction cannot stand. I respectfully request this court to set aside charge one and specification and remand for sentence reassessment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And that concludes the argument. The case is now submitted. We thank counsel for both parties for your presentation today. The court will stand in recess until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning.
All rise.